Welcome, fellow confidence crusaders, neuro nerds, and success equalizers. This is your podcast, Real Confidence. I'm your host, Alyssa DeVere, and I'll be sharing a bit of basic brain science, some surprising social secrets, and a touch of tough love. Why? Because I believe confidence is everyone's fundamental right and choice. So let's get to it. The research over and over again at the Institute shows us that our confidence peaks when we're 60. And we've leaned on that statistic for almost a decade now to say, you know, we're all work in progress until we get to that magic point, that peak, where we finally don't care what other people think about us. And I was really thinking about this deeply just recently, because I'm dealing with a lot of things that are making me question, is that really true despite the data? But more importantly, like, why? Why do people say that? Now, my wonderful dog, Georgie, is 15 human years old. In other words, he's times seven that in dog years, supposedly. But needless to say, he's old. And he has been rapidly aging in the last 12 months, incontinence. He sleeps a lot. He's very shaky, can barely walk up and down the stairs, particularly in the mornings, trips a lot. He doesn't like to be touched. He snarls back when you try and reach for him or surprise him. He doesn't want to go for walks. Now, all this is sad, and I my heart is heavy as I'm saying this, but I think all these signs could be applied to people. I remember the last years of my father's life, and I watch even my mother, who is extremely limited in her mobility these days. And this was the person who used to run around New York like it was no big deal, because, you know, you got to get somewhere. And today, getting her out of her apartment is a big deal. You know, it's not just a physical thing, of course, it's a mental thing. And myself, my sister, all the grownups of that generation, and then all the kids, how we make fun of these elders and their inability to navigate their cell phones and the internet and this, that, and the other. I mean, just the other day I was with my mother because the IRS had kicked back her return, her tax return, because of an identification thing that they wanted her to do. And I say thing, boy, was it complicated. It involved not only uploading a picture from the phone that you're uploading to using, and she couldn't send me a picture or anything like that. We tried that, but then it did a face scan on that same device. And then we had to pick out particular line items out of her tax return and all those things. I said, you know, there's no way she could have done it on her own. In fact, I was challenged and frustrated as all hell trying to help her and thinking to myself, is that an age thing that I'm so frustrated? Am I frustrated that she can't do it? Am I frustrated that the damn IRS expects anybody to do it, let alone somebody over 80? You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're stupid by any means. It's just new territory, right? And it, of course, it gets harder and harder to adjust to change as we get older. But even my husband, dealing with all kinds of physical challenges right now, it has been very, very stressful and hard on him emotionally. You know, I look in the mirror some days, and even right now as I'm doing the Zoom meeting, I'm looking at my own reflection going, who is that person? I don't recognize her. Not that she looks old or necessarily tired, but the changes are profound. You know, my body, what the heck? Where did that stomach come from? You know, everything's not just sagging, but it's drooping. It's begging for gravity to let it just fall. And, you know, the symptoms that I mentioned with my dog, you know, getting up in the morning and feeling stiff and aches and pains and, you know, getting old, as they say, as I say, sucks. But we reach our confidence peak at 60. That's what the data said. And so the good news, really the good news, is when you ask people if they would go back to being a teenager, or even in many cases, a college student age, or the 20s, 30s, or even 40s of their lives, most people would say no, especially if they had to go back with the same amount of knowledge and experience that they had then. In other words, that they could not apply what they know now to being a 20-year-old in a 20-year-old body. Most people would say, no, I would not go back. Or I would want to change a bunch of stuff. But again, that is because they're now wiser, smarter, more experienced, have a better perspective. And so when we ask 60-year-olds, every time we do the study, and we've done it now 4 or 5 times, what is it about being 60 that makes you feel most confident? They clearly, consistently say, it's because they don't care what other people think anymore. They let go of that social pressure, of the need to belong. They let go of that scrutiny, that sense of I've got to be thinner, better, faster, smarter, richer, a better this, a better that, achieve more, post more frequently, do things that make other people feel envious and jealous. They no longer feel the need to do that. There is a comfort of who you are and what you are that you finally get at that age. Now, is it exactly on 60? I don't know. I'm not there yet. But certainly what I know now would have made me a much less aggressive, much less insecure teen or 20-year-old. It certainly would have helped me get through those parenting moments where I questioned if I was pushing my kids hard enough or too hard. It certainly would have helped me maybe calm down a bit in the overzealous career work that I did. In other words, you know, the craziness of pushing myself hard at nights and weekends to not only not get ahead, but perhaps push myself even further behind others that were finding that to be obnoxious or intimidating. So yeah, it would have been nice, I guess, or it would be nice to have a little bit of a time machine where I keep my knowledge and brains and all the things I've learned in the almost 60 years of my life to go back and not care so much what other people think about and do me and do what I feel is right for me at that time. But that's not real. That's not possible. We try and teach our teenagers. We try and teach our 20-year-olds. Mine just left teenagehood this weekend. So maybe a part of this whole analysis is because of that. But we try and teach them these things. But we all know we don't want to hear it then. We don't want to listen to our elders because what do they know? They're technologically not smart. They don't understand. They're not tuned into the world. When you're 20, everybody else knows nothing, right? So perhaps that's part of this problem or part of the challenge. Now, in reality, we do care what other people think, even at 60. We do. Of course we do. But maybe we're not so caught up in the petty competitiveness. The I've got more, you've got less, I'm prettier, less wrinkles, this, that, and the other. Or maybe there's a few other reasons. A few other reasons we feel like it finally we can kind of let go of all those neuroses, of all those insecurities. Partly because our priorities change. And do they change because we choose to change them or because they just change? In other words, maybe it's not so much fun to go to a nightclub anymore because you got to stand up and listen to loud music and scream over it and feel lousy the next day, right? Because your body just can't handle it. But at the same time, You're like, you know, staying home, watching a movie with my feet up on the couch, that sounds a lot more fun. A little lot more asocial, of course, but a lot more fun. So our priorities change, you know, our focus on our family, our commitment to our kids, our dogs, our cats, whoever it is, our spouses, and of course, the friends that we keep close. We want to take the limited amount of time we have, time that's left over, and we want to give it to those people that matter to us. So our priorities change. And yeah, that's in that breath. Do I care with people that I don't care as much about? You know, those kind of peripheral friends or the strangers in the supermarket, for that matter, who may be judging me because I'm not dressed to the nines. But you know what? It doesn't matter because all my cognitive and physical energy, my financial resources, I have clearly made decisions about how to spend those for and with the people that matter to me. I also have that blunt awareness now of things that I really don't like going to a nightclub and standing up for 4 hours, or even a concert for that matter. My husband, who goes to concerts almost, well, pretty much every weekend, at least one, sometimes multiple ones, has no qualms standing up, listening to music 3 hours, dancing about with other people, rubbing against him. Me, that to me is just torture. I don't care how good the music is. So, you know, I'm very clear that that's not what I want to do. And if I'm going to go to a show, I want to be sitting down. And if I can't, then the show's not worth it to me. So, knowing exactly or at least closely things that you don't want to do, that comes with age. Knowing things that you're like, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. It's not worth the effort to do XYZ, whatever it might be. Maybe it is straightening your hair, right? I have very curly, coarse hair. It takes forever to straighten. And some days, like, no, I'm not up for it. Actually, most days, I'd say it's a very rare occasion, a rare occasion I do it. But, you know, you say, yeah, I would look really good, but or that would be really fun. I think maybe nah, the effort. So as we're getting to that magic number of 60, I think a lot of those pieces fall in place. A lot of those decision points become a lot clearer because of the experience we have. And I find myself almost entertained by the number of choices that I don't have to make anymore, whether it is the color eyeliner I choose or the particular restaurants that I want to go to, because I know what I like. And I don't feel like I'm missing out necessarily all the time by not being with the rest of the world in some loud, noisy, uncomfortable place. Yeah, so I think that's all part of it. But I guess the question then always stands in these podcasts is, if we're not in that confidence space, if we're not feeling our peak confidence, and we're getting pretty close to age 60, or maybe we want to hack it and get a little closer even sooner in our 40s, 50s, what can we do? Well, that, my friends, you're going to have to wait till after the ad to hear my take on that. I'll be right back.
This podcast was sponsored by the American Confidence Institute. ACI uses basic brain science to teach you not what, but how to think with more confidence. ACI is endorsed by top universities and business experts, and it is accredited by the Society for Human Resource Management and the International Coaching Federation. Learn more about ACI's uniquely empowering keynotes, workshops, online training, and coaching certification at www.AmericanConfidenceInstitute.com.
So, a magic question, and I probably don't have magic answers, but the magic question is, how do we get to be our confident best at any age? How do we get there faster, more confidently? Whether we are about to get to that data point of 60 or sooner. I think the answers are pretty pervasive, because it doesn't really matter how old you are, it's a matter of the way you think. And how you think, what you think, those are different, right? How you think is making the conscious decisions, being very mindful of your choices and not necessarily taking all the advice from people, me included, to say, this is what you should do, because what you should do may not be what works for me and vice versa. I also know that what you think is contextual. So in one circumstance, it may work great. You know, you're going to give a presentation or ask for a raise, and it may work great to take a breath, count to five, do a mantra, whatever your technique is, even use a confidence collection that I have talked about many times on this podcast. But there's days you may wake up from bed, as I did the last few, and go, things just don't feel right. What am I going to do to retrack things generally, my life, so that I really do feel confidently optimal? Well, I'm not going to say that these are the answers, but they certainly can help. And the top of my list, this can sound a little bit morbid, and I apologize, but I think it's really important. I have this very profound appreciation for staying alive, for beating not so much the odds of dying early, but how many people that you know, and I'm sure we all do, that didn't make it, that aren't at our age today for whatever reason. And the truth of the matter is that life is hard. Life is unpredictable. And yes, you know, kind of live only once, you only live once kind of thing, YOLO. But reality is you're living right now. And I think there's something to be celebrating about that. You're probably breathing, your heart's beating. And you probably have a lot of things around you, including people who love you. And it doesn't take an army. You don't have to have, you know, an entourage. And we're in our 20s, we think everybody loves us because they're in our wedding party. Well, the reality is by the time you get to age 60, there's probably two or three really good friends you have. We know that statistically. So if you have two or three people in your life that you could pick up the phone and say, hey, I just needed to talk to somebody, or hey, just want to let you know I love you, that's awesome. And celebrate that too. I think that, you know, wherever we are in our journeys, wherever we are technically on our understanding of our phones and our devices, or wherever we are financially, or wherever we are in our careers, it's easy to see the people above us. It's really easy to see the people who seemingly have more. And of course, I always question, is it a facade? Is it just for show? Do they have more money, for example, but less love in their life? Quite possibly. And it doesn't matter. It's just easier to look up. For some bizarre reason, we're always like, I'm not good enough because look at those people who have more or better than I do. But we don't usually look down, right? And down, or even to the side, people who are in our lives that have real complicated relationships with their families, with their friends, with their kids, people who on the surface, you know, probably look pretty much together, but because you know them a little bit better than the average human out there, you know that they really struggle maybe with depression or anxiety or their weight or their whatever, fill in the blank. So not to say that you should celebrate their deficiencies, but maybe recognize that not only are they human, so are you. And as humans, it takes us on average 60 years to realize that we're human, that we do the same things that everybody else does, that we get up in the morning, we go to the bathroom and we brush our teeth and we get dressed one pant leg at a time. And yet, for 60 years, we think that somebody's got a better recipe for that. Yeah, there are people that seemingly want you to believe that. But at the end of the day, we all have the aches and pains. Gravity gets the best of us. And at the same time, the reward for that is finally feeling that you are who you're supposed to be, that the world wants you to be this way. And hopefully you do too. Before we totally wrap up, I want to let you know that full transcripts and show notes for this and other Real Confidence episodes can be found on www.AmericanConfidenceInstitute.com/podcast. I also want to remind you once again that the best way to get confidence is to give it to others, and you can do it just by liking and sharing this episode on your preferred podcast and social media channels. You can even give me some confidence by noting topics you'd like me to consider for the future. So for now, this is Alyssa DeVere. Thank you for helping to bring more confidence to the world. Master editing done by Ben Weinstein, with original music performed and composed by Jeff Mitchell. Real Confidence is a production of American Confidence Institute. All rights reserved.